Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani.
From Hawaii, Honolulu, Waikiki Beach, a big L.A. welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous Blog Talk Radio Network. And, of course, on YouTube and Stitcher and Blueberry and all those other places, my website. Yes, folks, I am the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey. And I should say, Adrian is the gal as well. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. We have an exciting show planned for you today, an unexpected show. We had a guest who was a doctor, but she had to cancel unexpectedly because you know how doctors are. So it's just me and Adrian. We're going to be talking about boundaries, a very, very important topic if you happen to be a caregiver. In fact, Adrian, it's an important topic if you happen to be human and have any relationship with any other human being. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely.
So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. And if you're new to the show, we have many new listeners since we've gone video. The one thing we know about caregivers, by the way, is that they are caring and selfless and sacrificial. And, you know, because of that, because they put everyone else's needs above their own and they give and give and give till there's nothing left to give and they have an empty gas tank, they tend to burn out. Because of that very reason, they just don't know how to say no. They just don't have boundaries in their life. And sometimes it's not the other person's fault because the caregiver never communicated those boundaries that they even exist. And if they do exist, where they are. So, and we'll get into that more. But like the airlines always tell us in the event of emergency, put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your loved one with their mask. And the reason they say that, and by the way, did you see what they did to that guy on American Airlines last night who refused to give up his seat? My gosh. Think you have freedom in America, huh?
National news.
You know what? I'm not flying United anymore. That's it. They've been chopped off my list. Yep. Anyway, let me get back to my show here. The airlines, especially United, will tell you that if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved one, then you will burn out. So just imagine that plane going down, everyone screaming, and your bundle of joy gasping for breath. Whose mask are you going to put on first, huh? Now I'm not sure. But you've got to. I mean, how long could it take to put a mask on? You know, you grab it and you put it on, you like 5 seconds. You could do it. And really, that's how long it realistically and figuratively and symbolically takes to put your needs first in a caregiving situation. Not a lot of time, you know? So anyway, we don't want you to black out. The airlines don't want you to black out. Otherwise, you won't be any good with anything or anybody. So. And we also talk about grief and loss here, because anytime somebody loses something, and let's face it, folks, we all lose something every single day, every single hour sometimes, it throws us into this thing called the grief process. And we try to look for shortcuts out of it, but there is no shortcut. You have to go through the grief process. It is a process, and it's different for everybody, and it may take days, weeks, months, years to get through it. So you want to really give it the attention it deserves. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you have to feel like you're stuck. Hey, I want to take this time and thank my last week's guest, Ronald Bittner. I'm so bad. You can see that show and this show and all of our shows on my website, caregiverscaregiver.com. That's caregivers with an S, caregiverwithoutans.com. And just a reminder, when you're on that website, just take our short quiz to see if you're a candidate for burnout. And just for doing that, we're going to send you my book, my first book I ever wrote, absolutely free. It's a great book, getting rave reviews, still on Amazon, $10 value, free, just because I'm a nice guy and I want you to overcome this thing called caregiver burnout. Oh, I heard Tinkerbell. Is she in the background? Anyway, getting back to business here. I'm easily distracted, I guess. All right, enough of that. Adrian, welcome to the show. And I'm sorry that I'm in Hawaii and you're not. That's the quality of caregivers, empathy. You know, we can feel your pain and sympathy.
I'm not in pain. It would be pleasant. Yeah. I'm not in pain.
Yeah, as if I need a reason to come to Hawaii, but one big reason was that I've been fooling around with my book. Is that coming from me? I've been fooling around with my book for 2 years. I've been bouncing books out once a year, and then all of a sudden, you know, I was told, "Oh, this book needs to go through a publisher," and I said, "Okay," and you know, it needs to be longer. And I said, "Okay," and since it needs to have a higher, you know, quality of writing, I said, "Okay," and 2 years later, the book's still not out there. And finally, I said, "You know what? What?"
You have an editor?
Kinda. I have a book coach, and you know, we have a book group, etc. And so she's helped a lot. But the problem is with publishers, you know, major publishers. The industry has changed so much lately that it's just not the same as it used to be. I mean, it's changing literally daily. And so a lot of them, if they believe that, you know, your how-to book isn't in the hottest category, you know, and caregivers may not be in the hottest category right now, you know, they're not going to give it a lot of excitement, et cetera. Besides, they're going to do, you relinquish all your control, and you're lucky if they don't change the title or they pick the book cover and you don't like it. And, you know, it just takes so long for them to do stuff and make up their mind, et cetera. And I says, you know, this book should have been out 2 years ago because my listeners need it, you know, now, yesterday. And if I continue to go down that road, I don't know when this book's coming out. So I'm just going to self-publish it like I did my other two books. And I get to keep, you know, 100% of everything. And, you know, I'm going to go on a book tour and I'm on a speaking thing. I'm going to be speaking at Harvard in July.
Whoa.
And so, you know, doors are opening up. And so I said, this is the time. I want that book to come with me to Harvard. And so let's just see what God's going to do, you know. So I got it all done in like, I mean, it was mostly done. Just needed those final things. I needed to read it over again and again and again. And, you know, it's hard reading your book over again and again and again and looking. But every time I would find things to correct or things to improve. So it was a useful process. And finally, after four times, I hardly had any corrections on that last time. So I was, okay, this is it. It's good enough. And then, you know, book cover. I went out sailing, took a picture. I had someone take a picture of me, and we have a book cover now. So we're ready, and I'm excited. It's been a very productive Hawaii vacation, and I've relaxed as well. So tonight we go home, but we won't get home until 4 a.m. in the morning. So, but boundaries is a very important topic. Wouldn't you agree, Adrian?
Definitely.
I mean, I even have a chapter in my book on boundaries. And of course, we'll be referring to that. I think the chapter is called "Say Yes to Boundaries, Say No to Limitless Caregiving." So what are your thoughts on boundaries, just right out of the gate, Adrian?
Right out of the gate, it takes knowing the person you're caring for, and how you have to approach them with the topic. When they think that you should just be paying attention to them and nothing else, and your life is just falling apart because you're just so busy, you have to know how to say no.
That's right.
In a nice way.
Know how to say no. You know, there was a book that came out, Boundaries. That's how I first got introduced to the topic, I don't know, 20 years ago or so, and however long it's been out. And I understood by reading the book that I already had boundaries in my life, and I didn't realize it. You know, it's just my temperament, my personality, and the way I am. You know, I put up little check marks. You know, people just can't violate my space without permission. I didn't understand the concept of a boundary, but apparently I was smart enough to know that, you know, this is my space, you know, and there's nothing more uncomfortable than somebody getting into your space and pushing their face, you know, get in, right? They're in your space and they're in your face. That is so uncomfortable. And it's like, excuse me, you know, at least an arm length. Thank you. But caregivers just naturally are self-absorbed. You know, they're very self-centered, and they didn't used to be, perhaps, maybe they did, but they don't necessarily had to have been, but now all of a sudden they're in need. And whenever someone's in need, it's all about me. You know, it's all about not me, but all about them. And so, first of all, you can't take it personally. And they don't know your boundaries. And even in a relationship, you know, mother, father, son, daughter, aunt, uncle, grandparents, you know, it's nice to communicate boundaries. And you know, when it first becomes evident is when an adult child gets married. And now you, the parent who had a carte blanche of just dropping in to the to their house anytime you wanted, unannounced, you know, all of a sudden, mom, dad, we don't want you to just drop in. We love you. We love you to visit, but you have to call first. And it's hard for a lot of parents to get used to that concept. They're like in shock, but you know, I forget, and my wife forgets sometimes, how it was with our parents. We didn't want them just dropping by anytime, you know, it's best to call and so on. And we forget that we're turning into our parents, and that's a scary thing, isn't it? Any comments on that? Agree, disagree?
Me? Absolutely agree. There are times things come out of my mouth and it's like, oh no, I sound like my mother. We got to do something about that.
Yes, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And when I say, you know, it's our fault because we didn't communicate our boundaries. So there are lots of, and using that same example, this could go on for years where the adult child feels this way, but doesn't communicate it because they're kind of afraid that they're going to hurt their feelings. And so they just kind of grin, and their husband, you know, kind of said, well, I thought you were going to talk to her. You know, said, well, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, 10 years goes by and she hasn't communicated her boundaries because she doesn't like confrontation. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a word the caregiver should know the word, the meaning of, right?
I think you need to also consider when in terms of the caregiver being sensitive to the other person, when it's okay to talk to them about something like this. You shouldn't start to set your boundaries while you're in the middle of an argument.
Right. Take them out to dinner or something.
Yeah. Well, no. You. With my mother, for example, she would be insulting to all these people that I was close to, her friends and my husband and whatever. She would just say whatever she wanted to, not care about my feelings or his feelings, and basically. I finally just had to tell her, if you don't stop talking about them the way you are, I'm not coming down to Florida once a month for a week to take care of you. I won't. You must get control of this. I've heard it for 40 years. I don't need to hear it anymore. And she stopped because I was very firm about that boundary.
What was her initial reaction? Was she defensive, argumentative?
No, I think because I waited and she saw that I had put up with her nonsense for so long, when I finally was able to communicate what I needed her to do for me, she listened and basically just said, well, okay. And for the most part, she was able to do it. She slipped from time to time, but it was much better. But to get someone to hear you, you really have to craft what you want to accomplish before you go into talking.
I was going to say, that's why shows like Everybody Loves Raymond is so popular, because here we have a situation where Raymond's just kind of a wuss, you know, and he won't tell his parents or stick up for his wife, and
right.
They just pop over any old time. In fact, they moved far away from them in an apartment on the other side of town. And if you remember, there was an episode where they bought, there was a house for sale right across the street from the parents, mm-hmm. and they bought it for them. It's like, now you can be with us, you know? And it's like, oh my gosh. And so how many stories are so common like that? You know, we just don't want to confront. Now, mm-hmm. confrontation can be a good thing and it can be a bad thing, right?
Yeah.
So give me your ideas of how much confrontation should a caregiver have in their life. You know, should they be confronting people all the time, you know, defending their rights, and or they should be like Raymond and not do it? I mean, where's the balance?
I find that if you're consistent and not necessarily confrontational, but if you just ask for something and you don't feel that person heard you, next time the situation comes up, you just say what you have to say again. And then, I mean, after it's gone on for a while, if they haven't listened to you, a lot of people just turn people off and can't hear them when they're saying things that they don't want to hear. But before you really get combative, you know, say, look, I've told you and asked you 6 times, 10 times, would you please do this, or would you please not do this? It's really important to me, and there should be a consequence with a boundary. If you don't do this, I can't do that. And I found that that was the most effective way of doing things.
Yeah, it's so true. There has to be a consequence, or else, you know, they're just going to continue walking all over you, or whatever it happens to be doing.
Yeah, that's your tool, you know, the consequence. That's a threat. It doesn't have to be it's not like, if you don't do this, I'm going to beat you to a pulp. You know, that's not what you're saying. But if you don't do this, I'm going to have to get somebody else in here to help you. Or if you don't do this, we're going to have to cut back on the hours or whatever. You should have a reserve, or know what the people around you really need, and threaten to somehow make their lives a little more difficult unless they make your life easier.
Yeah, and really this is the concept of tough love, isn't it? You know,
yes.
Which originally came out of drug addicts and
right.
and the enablers, you know,
yeah.
and how Al-Anon got started, because they found that the loved ones of alcoholics and drug addicts really have the same quote unquote drug problem as their loved one. Even though they're not taking drugs, the drug becomes the individual who's taking the drugs. So that's their drug, this person. And they just do everything in their power to try to fix the person. And that usually involves giving them whatever they want or need so that they're not in pain anymore. But unfortunately, what they want and need isn't your stuff. They need consequences because you're enabling
yes.
that bad behavior. And it's just a never-ending cycle.
You should not just capitulate to everything that the person that you're caring for needs. Now, there are times that what they're asking for is perfectly within reason. Or even if it's a little difficult for you to do, it's still reasonable because what they're asking for is something that they need. But if they want you to be at their side 24 hours a day and you know, look in on them and ask them what they need every hour, you know, that's ridiculous. In order for us to be healthy caregivers, we need to know when to say, look, once a week, I'm going to need 3 hours to do this, or I'm going to need, you know, I'm going to go for a manicure or a pedicure or whatever it is that's going to make you feel better about yourself and take care of yourself. They need to know that this is as important to you as being good to them. It's like I can't continue to care for you in the way I've been caring for you if I don't have something for myself. Like
right.
Like this is my life too. My life is important. You know,
it's a great title.
Yes, it's a great title for a book.
And in fact, that's why in Hawaii for the cover of the book, you know, we are struggling so much. What should we have for recovery on? And even if it's young hands, I wanted something more exciting. So I thought of a sunset, you know, and people says, no, that looks too
it's a little
like religious
corny.
Or like a sympathy
religious.
Card. Someone said it looks like
yeah,
death,
that's
you know,
true. That
the
too.
Final chapter, you know. So my coach says, you know, you need to be out there doing what you love. And I love sailing. And so we took a picture of me sailing this big boat, you know. And
right.
You don't have to be a millionaire. You don't have to own a boat. But you can certainly go out and rent a boat for an hour if that's your passion. Or go to the golf course and shoot some balls if that's your passion. Or mm-hmm. or whatever, you know. And so there aren't very many. In fact, I don't think there are any books out there that are just, you know, promoting and cheerleading. Get out there and do stuff, you know, and that's what I wanted this book to do. And it's filled with very practical takeaway stuff. And it's called It's My Life Too. I'm not totally certain on the order of the other one, but it's basically when to say yes, when to say no to thrive in long-term caregiving. And it'll be out June 1st. And we're real excited because we've waited way too long to come out with it. I apologize, everybody. And I just wanted to share a story because I asked, you know, does confrontation have to be like this big, heavy thing? No, it can be like I'm talking right now in the very tone, four,
yeah.
five, six lines. And I'll give you an example because, like I said, Charlene's mother doesn't listen to the show, so I know I'm safe. About 10 years ago or so, Charlene's mother can be sometimes a little paranoid, you know, if something's missing. No, she didn't lose it. She knew that she put it there. Someone must have stolen it, you know, and that's just getting worse and worse as she gets older. And they think it's, you know, a form of dementia. And so for about a year, she was hinting around that telling all her friends and family that Charlene was over and she just knows she took some pictures that she shouldn't have. And she
Ooh.
Just wants them back, you know, baby pictures, one of a kind pictures that she just values so much, and they're gone, and she just wouldn't let go of this bone, you know. Mm-hmm. And we would say, you know, I searched, and we don't have the pictures. I'm just being very nice, you know, for a year, and just saying, you know, you must be mistaken. They must be hit. I mean, her garage is a mess, you know, boxes everywhere. She says, you know, maybe sometime we can help you look for them. But no, she just wouldn't let it go. And finally, after about a year, you know, we could be talking something, and then all of a sudden she'll just break in and say, I just miss those pictures so much. If you would just give them back, you know. Da, da, da. And then finally, you know, I was up to here. I've had enough. And I just says, listen, I didn't even know what I was going to say, but it was going to be, it was going listen. To be life changing. And I says, we don't have the pictures. Charlene didn't take the pictures. And if you continue to bring this up, you're going to damage this relationship. And she didn't take the hint. She just continued. I says, all right, listen, we're not going to talk to you anymore as long as you continue to do this. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I just hung up the phone. Boom. And Charlene's just looking at me like white as a ghost. I says, because I did what she wanted to do, but couldn't.
Right.
Because she, you know, women and their mothers, I don't know, there's just some strange connection with those two that it's like, oh no, she can make my life miserable, you know, which I don't get, because me, I could just turn things off. It's okay. Like, I don't know if you ever watched the Shark Tank. There's a bald guy in there. He calls himself Mr. Wonderful. He says, you're dead to me. and you know, that's, I can do that. If somebody is not productive in my life and they're, you know, doing bad things.
Yeah.
All right. Hit the switch, he's dead to me, and you know, he no longer exists, you know, in my mind. And I only do that with really bad people, so don't think I'm a bad person. So this went on for 3 years. After this, we did not speak to her, and she did not speak to us, because of course we offended her. I hung up on her, you know. 3 years we did not speak. And it was the most peaceful 3 years of our life, I must tell you.
I know the feeling. I know.
Really?
Yeah.
So then one day, now she still thinks Charlene took them. One day, her son, Charlene's brother, called and says, you know, Mom's having a family reunion, just out of the blue, you know. And she thinks it would be really nice if you joined us, you know. And I don't know if she really thought that, or if he was saying it or whatever. He's the peacemaker trying to get the two together. Yeah. So I said, okay, you know, so we drove 2.5 hours to go to this family reunion, and it was pleasant. Everyone was on their best behavior, and it was nice. And that started the relationship up again. And so now we see her much less frequently, you know, maybe twice a year, and maybe talk on the phone, maybe once a month or once every other month. But that's better than zero. You know, and so she, to this day, she still thinks that Charlene took them. Now, even though she actually found one of them,
and you know what she told? That's beautiful. Yeah,
but
love
you know
that.
What she told her sister? She says, "I wonder how David snuck in here and put this picture underneath."
Back.
Yeah. So, and I could share another story, but I better not, just in case. You got any stories of your own, Adrian?
Oh, not with boundaries. Oh, well, yes, there is actually, because everybody is dead that I'm going to be that I'm going to be talking about. My mother and I were out to dinner at a kosher delicatessen, her favorite one, and I was a long distance caregiver, and I came down from New York once a month for a whole week. And my husband paid for the trip. He paid for the car. He paid for the hotel. He paid for everything. All my expenses, he paid for everything. We were at this deli, and a man walked by who was such a slob. And my mother said, you know, he reminds me of Steve. That's my husband. And I just said, "Do you have any idea what you just said and how much that hurts?" I said, "You have to realize, if it weren't for him, I couldn't be here. Don't ever say anything bad about him again. Or I will stop coming." That was always the thing that would make her capitulate, was, "I won't come again." And right. It was a threat, but it was not an idle threat. And that's one thing you have to know when you're setting a boundary.
That's right. Don't make idle threats.
Do not make idle threats. If it's
like,
not something that you...
Like the boy who cried wolf.
Do not make idle threats, because if they see that you are doing that, they know that they can play you. And it just puts you in a weakened position. If you constantly tell the truth, which with a lot of people is very hard, just be straightforward and honest and say what you want and what you must have in order to do the things that you do, and say it in a very calm tone and don't get angry. Because I mean, there were times that I could have really grabs her by the neck and say, "Now shut up about these things." No, I learned she can't hear you when you're yelling and screaming. You have to deliver that message in the right voice. And then you stand a better chance of their hearing you. And I also wanted her to finally say thank you to Steve for doing all of that. And she did. It took time. But she got to see what it was all about.
Oh. Yeah. I'm there's so many, you know, I have a cousin who's a drug addict, and he's off and on and off and on. And finally, I just had to I've always used tough love, but, you know, I always bring him back because I love him. But I just couldn't do it anymore. And so I haven't seen him in a long time, years. But he knows that if he ever gets his life straightened out, then he can certainly give me a call and we'll take up where we left off. Mm-hmm. But it's so sad to see the drug problem in this country, you know, now with heroin. You know, one of my grandchildren, he's adopted, he has Asperger's, but, you know, he's like 19 now.
Oh.
And he takes heroin. And I mean, it's just so sad, you know, and it hurts all the family that love him. It's so sad. And in a way, caregivers who are not healthy are like drug addicts. And you can take the same prescription for a drug addict and put it on a caregiver, and it'll work. Now, don't be offended, caregivers, that I'm calling you drug addicts. But just think about it. All the stuff that we mentioned on this show today, I mean, this could be an AA meeting, because it's the same thing. We enable those who need tough love, and as a result, our lives are in worse shape. You know, so many caregivers are just sicker than the people they're caring for. And there's an actual statistic now that 33% of caregivers die before the person that they're caring for dies. So you see, burnout is deadly, and enabling your loved one is deadly. So I don't know if they've ever done statistics on this, but from my experience, you know, just reading my posts, and I'm sure you've got the same numbers, but it just seems like 90% of all caregivers, all family caregivers out there are past the point of no return. They're burnt to a crisp, and they just need help, and they are exhibiting hopeless emotions. You know, this is never,
no way out.
Never gonna change. I'm gonna die like this. I'm in caregiver prison, life sentence, you know. And you try to offer them healthy suggestions. Well, you know, just, I have no one to help me, you know, I can't leave for 5 minutes to get a cup of coffee. I, you know, maybe, but maybe not. Maybe All I know is where there's a will, there's a way. How true is that remark, Adrian? You're a good Jewish girl. Where there's a will, there's a way. How many times has your mother told you that?
My mother was in. She was an odd duck. I mean, I had to live my life as do unto others, as my motto, because I just saw what she did with her life and how many people she, you know, offended and turned off and how alone she was. And I learned a lot of lessons from her bad behavior, but her bad behavior continued while I was taking care of her. And that just wouldn't do, because I was always the problem child who did the things that she didn't want done. I didn't live up to her expectations. And so she was always, more or less. But she finally came to see that I was the one who came through for her, you know, and I only could do it by saying, look, I can't stay with you. I have to have my own room at a hotel where I can go at night and be alone and take care of whatever business I have to do. She had somebody to stay with her. It's not as though I was neglecting her and leaving her alone, but I demanded that was a boundary. I have to leave at, let's say, after 11 o'clock when we would have watched television together. I drove back to my room and had a little bit of time for myself. And first thing in the morning, I go back to be with her. But it was also with Steve and his mother, two cancer patients who I took care of at the same time. Sylvia thought I was good as gold. I mean, she was totally the opposite of my mother. And my problem with them was that the mother and son were always fighting. And I couldn't take being around the two of them, which was something that I had to do. I needed to be around the two of them. So there were new boundaries that I had to come up with there. You know, you're crazy about your son, so why don't you just leave him alone for a while? You know, he's not going to change, Sylvia. He's 68. He's you know, but because
that's a great idea.
Because I was the good one, you know, I could explain things to her, and it's like, look at the life that we've built, and if you don't like it here, that was the other thing. She was always saying, I'm going back to Brooklyn. So it's like, there's the door, go. Nobody's stopping you. Nobody's forcing you to stay here with these people who love you and want to take care of you. You can go back to Brooklyn. You know, we'll call Accessoride, which is a service that's provided here for seniors on the East Coast. We'll call Accessoride, and they'll take you back to Brooklyn if that's what you really want. That shut her up. I mean, you have to shut down the constant, chronic, bickering kinds of arguments if you're going to be able, because those are the ones that repeat themselves. You have to shut that down so that you only start getting fed back the important stuff.
Yeah, and a lot of that is just manipulative
absolutely.
Bluff. Absolutely. And you need to call their bluff.
Absolutely. and it's there. I understand that they see that as a power, you know, this bluster. And very frequently, you know, the insults that hurt and sting. Mm. And why? Why do that? It can't make you feel better. You know, it does take a certain amount of wisdom to be able to set boundaries the right way. And I think there are enough books on boundaries for people who do want to read up on it and are having troubles doing it to find them. Just go to a Barnes & Noble, sit down, and flip through some and see which one talks to you, you know.
Yeah. And I wanted to read a couple of paragraphs in my new book.
Yay.
It's My Life Too. And this subchapter is called Boundaries Are Not a Secret. One of the issues I see again and again with caregivers is the unspoken, quote unquote, boundary. The caregiver feels resentful or violated, but has never told the caregiver, the care receiver, about the boundary that they'd like to set. How can a person honor a boundary they know nothing about? Perhaps you don't feel appreciated for all you do because your loved one rarely says the words, thank you. Your loved one may assume that you know how much your care means to them, but are unaware how much hearing those words mean to you. Your building resentment could be eliminated by a simple conversation. Now, here you have someone who's getting bitter and bitter and building resentment inside simply because their loved one won't say three simple words. That's how simple it is to fix a lot of this stuff. You know, thank you, or I love you, you know, two simple words. That's even easier. And so if you let your loved one know that hearing thank you is something you need, a boundary you need to set, he or she may be happy to oblige. However, if your loved one continues to be unappreciative of your assistance, you may need to take a stronger stand. And that kind of scares caregivers taking stronger stands because they don't like confrontation typically. Now, it's not appropriate for you to withhold what your loved one needs in order to get the appreciation you want. That would be abuse.
Cruel. That would be cruel. Right.
However, you can set out consequences for their lack of regard, such as spending less time in the room, as long as they don't physically require your presence. The example I'm using is not a serious one to most caregivers. However, I do know of situations where the care receiver is demanding, disrespectful, and difficult. In these cases, clear boundaries with consequences are required. Otherwise, you will grow more and more resentful and be more likely to burn out. And I tell in the book about this funny story about this husband who never says, I love you, to his wife, been married 50 years. And so finally, she just couldn't stand it. She goes, you never say you love me. Don't you love me anymore? And he, without even stop reading his newspaper, he just grunted out, I said it 50 years ago when I married you. And if anything changes, I'll let you know. And that's kind of how it is with a lot of these relationships, you know. But if, and I guess she put up with it for 50 years, she might be able to put up with it for another 50 years. But maybe she's reached her point. You know, maybe that's the straw that broke the camel's back. And that's why you see a lot of divorces after multiple years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, because they're just sick of it. And I wanted to say about, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. And this is in my own life. I've discovered, you know, I don't like getting up early because my wife, her, you know, she has insomnia. So we typically get to bed late, watching TV, you know, till 1 or 2 a.m. And so it's hard to get up early. And so those days that I had to be up early for work in the morning, I just remember, oh, I can't get out of bed. Oh, there's no way I can get out of this bed. And then I remembered, wait a minute, today's Saturday. I was going to go skiing. And I loved skiing in those days before I broke my ankle on my bike, not skiing. I remember all of a sudden something happened to me. I got motivated. I jumped out of bed and you couldn't stop me. I had adrenaline pumping through my veins. So don't tell me that you can't control, you know, what you want and what you don't want. For those caregivers who say, oh, there's no time to do this, there's no time. You know what? If you want it bad enough, if you're motivated bad enough, you will make a way where there is no way, you know, and God will help you. Because he opens doors that no man can close and closes doors no man can open. And that's just testimony of the human spirit that they can make anything happen if they wanted to happen. If you need to get away like you did to a hotel room for 3 days,
right?
And you've got someone who can come in with adequate care. No, it won't be perfect care. It won't be as good a care as you can offer, but it will be adequate. You know, they'll come back and the person will still be alive. They wouldn't have starved to death and they wouldn't be dehydrated. They would just maybe be bored or whatever, but absence makes the heart grow fonder and they'll appreciate you more when you get back.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my take on it. What do you got to say?
No, I agree. And you don't have to necessarily move out to a hotel for 3 days to make yourself more appreciated. But when people see that their behavior is not making, it is making you less available emotionally. Like you're just going through the motions and doing the things that you have to do, but there's no contact, no connection anymore, because you're just doing it. That will also show them that absence makes the heart grow fonder, that they'll really miss the gentler side, the more intimate side, because the relationships are very valuable to these people. And they don't say, you know, thank you and I love you enough, but you can sort of tell them, I know you really appreciate me, but it would be nice every now and then if you let me know that. Just said thank you, simply.
And not everybody
And don't do it when you're angry. You should not do any of this when you're angry. It should be done with a cool head.
Yeah, and like I said, not all of us need to hear that thank you. I mean, I don't. I can go on because I know they love me. But some people really, really need it. And, you know, if you're one of those people that really need it, then it needs to be on your priority list of things that are non-negotiable, you know, zero tolerance.
It's very easy to feel taken for granted. Yeah. You know, you've been there for so long. You'll still be here. No, I might not be there. You know, it's not a veiled threat, though. I'll repeat it. It has to be something that you would really be willing to carry out.
a lot of the problems with caregivers and boundaries is the baggage that they carry in their head, you know?
Yep.
Because they've been hurt or they, the last time they were confrontive, you know, it ended a relationship they didn't want to end because they didn't do it right or whatever.
Right.
But I love the story. I love the story about the little baby elephants. If you have been to the zoo, you've seen that they tie little baby elephants up with a stake tied to their little foot, the same stake that they tie the big elephants to. And of course, it's too strong for a baby elephant to pull that stake up because they're not strong. But to use the same thin cord to tie this mammoth guy to the ground, I remember asking my dad, that elephant can pick that up anytime they wanted to. You know, why don't they use a thicker cord? And I remember the answer, and I never forgot it, stuck with me, is that that big elephant used to be a little elephant, and they say elephants never forget. You know, an elephant has a wonderful, you know, it's like my mother-in-law, she never forgets, you know, she's got it all filed somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so this baby elephant who grew up, they remember that they tried to pick their foot up and the cord was too strong. And so they just logically, naturally assumed that they could never, ever, ever do it. So they just gave up forever, never to try it again. And that's why a giant adult elephant doesn't need a big, heavy rope, because they have been brainwashed, so to speak, that they will never be able to do that. And caregivers are the same way. Whatever their hang-up is, their mom from their childhood or from, you know, an abusive ex-spouse or even from an abusive ex-caregiver, or maybe from an abusive current caregiver, mm-hmm. They just think it's hopeless. You know, I've tried to fix this. I've tried. They just argue. Well, that's because you didn't try right. You didn't use the tough love with consequences. You know, consequences really do work. And so if you're really having trouble with this, I suggest some great books like, you know, Tough Love and Boundaries. And there's probably 100 others out there. But this stuff works. And I'm very, very skeptical when a caregiver tells me that nobody is willing to help. You know, you just haven't made the offer sound enticing enough. I mean, if you happen to be a massage therapist, barter. Say, you know what, if you watch mom for 3 days in a row, I will give you a 2-hour massage every week for a month, you know, or something like that. There are so many ways that you can be creative to get this mm-hmm. to happen. I mean, if I were to offer a caregiver $1 million cash, if he can get someone to help them out for, you know, a day or a week or whatever, I guarantee you that they would find a way, right?
Well, I just think that they'll also come up with a million excuses for why they're the only ones that can do it and nobody else can, and they can't, they just can't not do it. They can't set a boundary. It's going to hurt too much. They don't consider how much it's going to hurt them if they don't set a boundary. You know,
and that's called the martyr complex or martyr syndrome.
And a lot of caregivers, who are long-term caregivers, have given up so much they do feel like martyrs. And I get a lot of them on our website and on Facebook. Lots and lots of people. But it's amazing how many caregivers actually step up and write that other caregiver back about what they could be doing and how easy it could be.
Yeah.
Coming
but
from another caregiver.
But it must feel good to be a martyr.
Well, it feels good.
There must be some gratification.
Well, I'm the only one that can do it. Makes me feel very, you know, in control. The thing is, what a caregiver needs to remember is that they are really the one with all the power, and that they can make changes. That they can make changes. No one is going to think badly of them for putting their foot down and finally asking for what they need. I mean, of course, it's ridiculous if they say, well, I need this. I need to go away for 6 hours to have my nails done and a massage. Break it up a little bit. You know, like, don't just dump it all at once. Make it reasonable, but realize that you're the one that has the power in the relationship in actuality.
Yeah, during the first 2 years of Charlene's stroke and her grief, I knew what I needed. I needed to get away. I needed to fly to New York. I have relatives back there that I'm very close with. And a weekend in New York just sounded like heaven.
Yep.
And I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I was going to get it done. I got babysitters. I don't know how I bribed them or paid them or did what. But I really don't remember because it's not easy getting help. But I got help because I knew that if I didn't get away, I was going to explode.
Right.
And so I did it, you know, and so I don't even remember what I told my wife because she didn't want me to go. I might have.
Of course not.
I don't remember what I told her, but I hope I didn't lie to her. But I might have. You never know. I know is I did what I had to do.
You asked for what you really need. Mm. You somehow find a way to get what you really need. Yes.
Yeah. And you know, I didn't want to explode. I didn't want to be a martyr. I didn't want to spend the rest of my life saying, well, this is the way, because I know people like that.
Yeah.
And I don't understand what feels good about that, but apparently there are so many people that do that. It feels good. You know, it's like the so-called emotional overeater, you know, person who can down a gallon of ice cream in one setting because, you know, they just got fired or their boyfriend just dumped them. And and I know a girl who got dumped, got divorced, and she was very beautiful. And she just started eating gallons of ice cream and then she blew up like a balloon. And she's happy now because no guy's going to try to pick up on her. And so she's not going to get hurt.
Right.
And so she's safe now because she looks like an elephant, you know, and it's the ice cream that did it. And it's just, people must get that same comfort from being a martyr.
Yes.
And I personally don't get it, but you know what, for those of you who are martyrs, who are thinking about being martyrs, don't do it. You know,
yeah.
It don't becomes
a very, very good excuse not to do the things that you really want to do that would take some effort on your part, like to earn enough money to go take the vacation that you really need. Instead, I can't do that because of my mother. You know, I can't do that because I'm doing this or that. And that's not true.
Yeah, I call that the Eeyore mentality, you know, Eeyore the donkey. Oh, no, it's not going to work anyway, you know.
Right.
Might as well not even try, you know. I guess I'm just supposed to do this the rest of my life, you know. I hope I have crowns in heaven because I hope someone's seeing what I'm sacrificing in the next life, that I get a mansion or something, you know, whatever it is.
Yep.
You know, and yeah, they may get a mansion in the next life, but my gosh, you know, what are they just throwing away this life? You know? All right. Well, why don't we wrap this up? Why don't you tell people how they can get a hold of the great Adrienne Gruberg and her caregiver space? So much wisdom there.
It's Adrienne, Adrienne, at thecaregiverspace.org. And the website is www.thecaregiverspace.org. And the Facebook page is The Caregiver Space. And within that, there are now communities for, you know, special sections, special needs. That's growing fast too. It's terrific.
I'm impressed how many there are. What are there, like 10 of them now?
At least, yeah.
And I'm Dave Nassani, the caregiver's caregiver, and that's the caregiverscaregiver.com. And that's all you need to know. That's everything's there, my email, the show, the blog, the books. So thank you so much for tuning in, and we are going to be here again next week at this time. So Adrian, thank you, and
you're welcome.
We'll
thank
see
you.
Everybody next week.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.